It's Friday, May 15th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. Let's catch you up on a few things here before we get started. First of all, I want to give a shout out to the great state of Florida and those activists down there who are trying to get enough signatures for a medical marijuana initiative in Florida. You can check them out at puffm.org. That's P-U-F-M-M.org. People United for Medical Marijuana. P-U-F-M-M.org. If you'd like to help bring medical marijuana to the Sunshine State. And we continue to see fallout from the Normal Connecticut incident. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, this is where a former vice president of the former Normal Connecticut accidentally, as he claims, sent a threatening email to a state senator who then filibustered to death a decriminalization bill. Well, the headline in one of the prominent capital blogs there in Connecticut reads, "Marijuana decriminalization derailed by Normal activists' arrests." So that just should highlight how important it is that we in the cannabis community act better than, not as good as, but better than the other activists and reformers out there in the country. One small slip-up can mess things up for a whole bunch of dedicated professional activists. Finally, we've got 3 weeks until the Aspen Legal Seminar in Aspen, Colorado. I'm headed up there to record the events. We'll be presenting many of the speeches on the Daily Audio Stash when I return. If you'd like to attend Aspen Legal Seminar, there's still time. Check out norml.org. The host hotel, the Gant, has sold out. In fact, I'm going to be scrambling to get a room while I'm up there. But there's plenty of hotels around that still have some decent rates, at least for Aspen, Colorado, because it is the off season up there. So check it out, norml.org. You'll learn more about marijuana laws and how to defend them than you'd ever thought possible. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we've got your hemp headlines, beginning with commentary from prominent blogger Arianna Huffington, who says it's time to legalize. We take a look at Canada, which is now going to be paying for veterans' use of medical marijuana. New Hampshire Coalition for Common Sense Marijuana Policy's Matt Simon, a frequent guest on the Daily Audio Stash, absolutely owns the state's attorney general in a letter reply that was posted in a prominent state newspaper. And our own deputy director Paul Armentano's commentary on the seemingly annual story of the new super potent pot 2.0. Now, it is the third Friday of May, so that means we're going to be visiting with our celebrity entertainment correspondent, Steve Bloom, in New York City, the webmaster from celebstoner.com. Steve's going to break down his interview with federal medical marijuana patient Elvie Musica, a look at the drug czar's son still in jail on marijuana-related charges, and the latest roundup of celebrity marijuana busts. In our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, we're continuing our fortnight of Global Marijuana Music Award winners with It's a Wrap Friday's Supafly. And in our second interview segment, we're going to be bringing you an interview between Chris Goldstein and RJ Harris, a conservative radio host in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, that was broadcast on WHP 580 AM. The tide is turning, folks, so grab your surfboard and hang 10 on the wave of reform that's sweeping across the country. It's time for your normal daily audio stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Arianna Huffington, ending the war on drugs, the moment is now. From the Huffington Post. When it comes to addressing America's disastrous war on drugs, the Obama administration appears to be moving in the right direction, albeit very, very cautiously. But when it comes to putting its rhetoric into action, the Obama administration has faltered. Just a week after the Attorney General said there would be no more medical marijuana raids, the DEA raided a licensed medical marijuana dispensary in California. Obama's 2009-2010 budget proposes to continue the long-standing ban on federal funding of needle exchange programs. The current budget is still overwhelmingly skewed in favor of the drug war approach. Indeed, it allocates more to drug enforcement and less to prevention than even George Bush did. So the question becomes, is the Obama administration really committed to a fundamental shift in America's approach to drug policy? Or is this about serving up a kinder, gentler drug war? Do you follow astrophysics? Well, of course you do. Who doesn't? Well, in astrophysics, there is this unsettling phenomenon called dark matter. See, the astronomers have looked at the universe, calculated the mass of all the stars and planets and asteroids and comets and nebulae and black holes and such, and then did some math on the gravity and speed of all these objects, and they discovered something quite disturbing. Most of the universe that should be there isn't. All the math points to lots and lots of matter that we can't detect. Dark matter. So, what does this have to do with the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs? Well, I have this theory that concerning our marijuana policies, there must be some sort of dark facts that we're not detecting. I can understand the motivations of a reefer-mad drug warrior like John Walters. He really does believe Pot 2.0 is going to turn your kids into drug zombies, roaming the streets in search of strains. But when I'm faced with someone intelligent like Barack Obama, I'm flummoxed. I mean, you know he gets it, judging from his 2004 comments.
In terms of legalization of drugs, I think that the battle... The war on drugs has been an utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws. But I'm not somebody, who believes in legalization of marijuana. What I do believe is that we need to rethink how we are operating in the drug wars, and I think that currently we are not doing a good job.
And yet, once in office, it seems Obama has turned around to supporting the continued criminalization of marijuana. So how is it, when you gather all the facts and observations regarding marijuana, our leaders continue to pursue policy least recommended by the facts and observations? Governments have looked into the marijuana issue since Mayor Fiorella LaGuardia's commission in the 40s, to Nixon's Schaefer commissions in the 70s, to the pronouncements of the former Latin American leaders this year, and those facts and observations so obviously point to the need to decriminalize or even legalize marijuana. So what dark facts does Barack Obama know that those reports miss? Is it a dark fact that without an illicit street-level marijuana trade, the unemployment figures among young men, especially minorities, would skyrocket? Is marijuana dealing an under-the-table jobs and economic stimulus program for the poor, without which far more citizens would need welfare and food stamps? A way to keep calm the simmering cities without expending any political capital for real urban renewal? Is it a dark fact that the competition from free natural cannabis, that the need for opioids, benzodiazepines, and NSAIDs would plummet, two or three major pharmaceutical companies would fail, thousands would be out of work, and an economic ripple effect would rip through the healthcare industry? Is it a dark fact that without the daily grind of minor pot arrests and the seizures that result and the burn grants that local police departments depend on, many departments would suffer huge personnel losses and lack of funding and equipment, handicapping their ability to fight actual crime, and crime would actually go up with legal pot? Fulfilling their prophecy, see, we told you crime would increase if pot were legal. Is it a dark fact that with competition from strong renewable hemp, that the need for oil, timber, and cotton would plummet, and the resulting industry and jobs created for hemp would be less than the current jobs in oil, timber, and cotton, causing massive unemployment in Texas, the Pacific Northwest, and the Southeast? In other words, overall, is it a dark fact that legalizing marijuana actually would cause more overall harm to the nation in terms of unemployment, economy, jobs, and crime than what marijuana prohibition creates currently? My answer? So what if it did? Is the well-being of many worth injustice toward a few? Even if in the short term marijuana legalization upsets our economy, in the long term, we will be much stronger. Canada now pays for veterans medical marijuana. From CTV.ca. The military may strictly forbid marijuana use by its soldiers, but the federal government has decided to pay for medical cannabis for some veterans. Veterans Affairs has reversed a previous ban, now saying it, quote, may provide payment in relation to the associated costs of medically required marijuana to clients who have qualified, end quote. Payments can be made only to veterans licensed by Health Canada to possess medical marijuana and who buy government-certified cannabis produced on contract by a firm in Flin Flon, Manitoba. The policy change was approved last October, but is only now being communicated to veterans who require the product for pain management and other severe medical conditions. About 8 veterans licensed by Health Canada are having their medical marijuana bills picked up by taxpayers, said Janice Summerby, spokeswoman for Veterans Affairs. Wow! A large North American country with legal medical marijuana coast to coast extending their government-paid universal health care coverage to pay for marijuana? How are the Canadians dealing with the inevitable socialism and teenage heroin addiction that's sure to result? Matt Simon owns New Hampshire Attorney General on incorrect and misleading letter about medical marijuana. Matt Simon from the New Hampshire Coalition for Common Sense Marijuana Policy is featured in an excellent piece in today's Concord Monitor. State Attorney General Kelly Ayotte and county prosecutors have aggressively pushed back against a bill that would legalize marijuana for some seriously ill patients, sending lawmakers a letter calling marijuana an addictive drug and claiming that reclassifying marijuana as medicine could undermine efforts to keep youths from trying drugs. The bill's supporters decry the letter as, quote, misleading, and have circulated a 7-page rebuttal of the 2-page letter. I've got the link to the original story at stash.normal.org, and you should click over and read the whole thing. It's one of the fairest pieces of reporting on a medical marijuana story I've ever seen. Matt's rebuttal is wonderful, with footnotes to published references to back up his assertions. It's a great template for anyone looking to rebut specific reefer madness claims for your next letter to the editor. But I did want to clip just this one portion at the end of the article. Only one of the 10 county attorneys didn't sign the letter, Coos County's Bob McKeel. He cited two reasons. He said, quote, "The first is, really just as a general principle, it's my job to enforce the laws, it's not my job to make them. I just don't think it's appropriate to tell the legislature what the law ought to be," end quote. How refreshing! How many times have you heard, when you point out the cruelty of marijuana laws to a police supporter, "Well, it's just their job to enforce the laws, they don't make them," and then, the very next week, there are police at the state capitol testifying against a medical marijuana bill? You can't have it both ways. His second reason? As a personal injury lawyer for 25 years, he represented people who were in, quote, "terrible plights," end quote, and had lost limbs. McKeel said, quote, "In those instances, really, if anyone in that situation can get relief from anything, I just don't think I should stand in the way of that," end quote. I've always maintained that the quickest way to get a medical marijuana law passed in your state would be to mandate 1 week of volunteer time for every state legislator to help out at a cancer hospital, an AIDS hospice, or a pain clinic once per session. Don't believe the hype. Potent pot? So what? Analysis by Paul Armentano.
This ain't your grandfather's or your father's marijuana. This will hurt you. This will addict you. This will kill you.
Mark R. Truville, DEA Miami, speaking to the Associated Press, June 2007. Government claims that today's pot is more potent and thus more dangerous to health than ever before must be taken with a grain of salt. Federal officials have made similarly dire assertions before. In a 2004 Reuters Newswire story, government officials alleged, quote,
"Pot is no longer the gentle weed of the 1960s and may pose a greater threat than cocaine or even heroin,"
end quote. Anti-drug officials failed to explain why, if previous decades pot was so gentle and innocuous, police still arrested you for it. In 2007, Reuters again highlighted the alleged record rise in cannabis potency, proclaiming, quote,
"U.S. marijuana grows stronger than before,"
end quote. Quoted in the news story was ex-drug czar John Walters, who warned, quote,
"This report underscores that we are no longer talking about the drug of the 1960s and 1970s. This is pot 2.0,
end quote. Predictably, in 2008, the mainstream news media ran with yet another set of news stories alleging that the pot plant's strength had reached all-time highs. According to a June 12, 2008 Associated Press story, the latest analysis from the University of Mississippi's Potency Monitoring Project tracked the average amount of THC, the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana, in samples seized by law enforcement agencies from 1975 through 2007. It found that the average amount of THC reached 9.6% in 2007, compared with 8.75% the previous year. Or not. An actual review of the 2008 University of Mississippi data revealed this nugget of information. The average THC in domestically grown marijuana, which comprises the bulk of the U.S. market, is less than 5%, a figure that's remained unchanged for nearly a decade. Which brings us to this year. Naturally, the feds are once again sounding the alarm, as reported on CNN.
Marijuana potency surpasses 10%, U.S. says.
I suppose, if nothing else, the government's annual new and improved pot claims are good advertising for marijuana dealers. As for the rest of the public, it's time for a reality check. First, it's worth noting that police and lawmakers made these same alarmist claims about the suddenly not as dangerous or strong as we once said it was pot of the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. These allegations were false then, and they are still false now. Second, THC, regardless of potency, is virtually non-toxic to healthy cells or organs and is incapable of causing a fatal overdose. Currently, doctors may legally prescribe an FDA-approved pill that contains 100% THC, and curiously, nobody at the University of Mississippi or at the Drug Czar's office seems to be overly concerned about its potential health effects. Third, survey data gleaned from cannabis consumers in the Netherlands, where users may legally purchase pot of known quality, indicates that most cannabis consumers prefer less potent pot, just as the majority of those who drink alcohol prefer beer or wine rather than 190-proof Everclear or Bacardi 151. When consumers encounter unusually strong varieties of marijuana, they adjust their use accordingly and smoke less. Finally, if U.S. lawmakers and government researchers were truly concerned about potential risks posed by supposedly stronger marijuana, they would support regulating the drug so that its potency would be consistent and this information would be publicly displayed to the consumer. Anyone ever been to a liquor store that sold a brand of booze that didn't post its alcohol content on the label? Didn't think so. So let's review, shall we? Our federal government ostensibly wants fewer Americans to consume pot. So they spend billions of dollars outlawing the plant and driving its producers underground, where breeders, over time, clandestinely develop stronger and more sophisticated herbal strains than ever existed prior to prohibition. The feds then inadvertently give America's marijuana growers billions of dollars in free advertising by telling the world that today's weed is more potent than anything Allen Ginsberg, Tommy Chong, or Jerry Garcia ever smoked in their heyday. In response, tens of millions of Americans head immediately to their nearest street corner in search of a dealer, or college student, willing to sell them a dime bag of the new super potent cannabis they've been hearing about on TV. The feds then demand more of your hard-earned tax dollars so they can get more Americans off the pot. Then next year, we do it all over again, same time, same station. Any questions?
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We're old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
This has been a public service.
When it gets to start, get to start night.
Marijuana culture is infused throughout America and the world. As we round out the week, we take a look at the 420 phenomenon in movies, TV, music, and sports with former High Times editor and author of Pot Culture, Steve Bloom, in our CelebStoner.com entertainment news. Once again, we head back to the East Coast, New York City, to speak with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Russ, how are you, man?
Oh, doing good. You've been busy. I've been busy. So it's nice to get to talk to you again and do one of these entertainment reports. Want to remind everybody you can get the latest celebrity stoner entertainment news at celebstoner.com. Check it out. And right there at the top of the page, you've got an interview, an exclusive interview with a wonderful woman I've had the opportunity to meet numerous times from here in Oregon. Tell our listeners about your interview with Elvi.
Well, Elvi Musica, she is, you know, one of the, you know, few living federal patients who receives medical marijuana from the U.S. government. She's one of four now, in the program that started in 1975. So, you know, I look at Elvi as quite the pioneer, in the medical marijuana movement. And, I'm also happen to be friends with Elvi, and so she stayed with me for a day and She came to New York to be at the marijuana rally, you know, the marijuana march, and participated in that thanks to, you know, Dana Beal bringing her in for the event. And it was a good opportunity to spend a little time with her. And she had another friend she stayed with. And then the day before she was leaving, Normal was having a benefit in town. And we attended that as well. And then so she stayed over and got a chance to do a little interview and photos with her. And I hadn't interviewed her since the time that I'd worked at High Times. I had written a story about her called Eyes of the World. And now I titled this one The Eyes of Alvi Musica. So she's, you know, obviously she knows, you know, what's going on in the medical movement as well as anyone, and especially in, you know, your neck of the woods in Oregon, because she lives in Eugene. And she gave me a lot of insight into what's going on with the medical program out there, the initiatives that have been in the works, and how things have been fought off. Just, you know, answering basic questions about, you know, why there aren't dispensaries in Oregon, and also her own use, which was kind of funny. She told her own story of, like, the first time she ever ate marijuana and how high she got. And, you know, she's an older woman. She's 70 years old, and sorry to have to broadcast that. She'll be mad at me. But and she not only uses marijuana for glaucoma, specifically for one eye, she also uses it for arthritis and other, you know, sort of ailments that she has as she's gotten older, and she's got one leg that she's had a problem with over the years. So it's beneficial to her in a lot of ways. And, you know, she's just living proof, you know, that marijuana is helpful for patients. I mean, she, you know, she pretty much lost vision, you know, in her, you know, her really bad eye, and she really was able to gain, you know, gain the back or stabilize it, and she doesn't have the pressure that you normally have. So she uses a one drop of a pharmaceutical, you know, solution, and she smokes or eats marijuana in some form throughout the day.
Yeah.
And that's how she does it. And, you know, pretty standard stuff as far as everybody else's, you know, probably, you know, medical use, but this is, you know, she's been doing this for a long time. And she, interestingly, what she does with the marijuana she gets from the government, she basically cooks with that. She's out in Oregon now. She has a caregiver out there who grows for her, and, you know, she has very good quality marijuana that your home state is famous for at her disposal, and so she doesn't have to smoke it anymore.
Yeah.
She doesn't throw it away or anything. She cooks with it, and I'll tell you, one of those cookies I ate while she was here, like, pretty strong.
she's always to be found in Salem, you know, testifying on these bills. I get to see her there all the time, and she's got a unique perspective of probably anybody in the country, in that she's a federal medical marijuana patient and a state medical marijuana patient. And with this recent story coming out of CNN, you know, the annual hype about the pot 2.0 potency and all of that, she can tell you that what they're growing at the University of Mississippi is definitely not quality.
Oh, she does say that. That's one of her main reasons why, when I think probably the most controversial thing she said in the interview was, do you think Obama should expand the compassionate IND program, which he is, you know, in. And she says, quite frankly, we've gone so far beyond that. The federal program should not be expanded. It's just inept. The way they treat the marijuana, chop it up with all the leaves, seeds, and stems. I picked up marijuana this March that was manufactured in 1995. The THC level is no longer there. But she says, but there are solutions to any problem anyone throws my way. So I moved to Oregon. So she's funny, you know.
Come west.
So, you know, just let's say, just God bless Alvi.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Now, another story that's in the media right now, of course, is the confirmation of Seattle Police Chief Gil Kerlikowske as our nation's new drug czar. But you've been covering the story of his son, which seems to have just gone under the radar.
I have to say it's true. You know, the story of Jeffrey Kerlikowske, who's currently in jail in Florida, Pompano Beach, on probation violations for charges stemming back several years, two of which are marijuana-related charges. One is a battery charge. He's been in jail since March, and now Kerlikowske, you know, has become the drug czar, there's really been no news about the son, so I actually decided to, I went to the website for the Broward County Sheriff in Florida, and I checked. We were originally found, with the help of Chris Goldstein, the arrest report, and that he had been in jail there, and the mugshot was there. And I went back there actually yesterday, and he was still in the system. And so I called just to make sure, and at the desk, they said he's there. So, you know, because if he's in the system, he's still there. And there was no, like, release date. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, because his father is now the drug czar, he should get him out of jail. But isn't the part of the reason why he is in jail is what he apparently is now opposed to is fighting a so-called drug war?
Mm-hmm.
His son is in jail partially due to marijuana charges. You know, it's stemming back to things that he hasn't followed and observed for probation stuff, but it's all part of the drug war apparatus. You're now in the legal net. You mess up, you're back in jail. You know, part of it, you know, so it's like, why is his son in jail, first of all, and why can't he get out of jail at this point? And maybe we just need to do a little more research, certainly, somehow or other, it's not up to them, but I just don't know why that's kind of continuing, and it never doesn't come up. Hey, your son's in jail. He's estranged. Why are they estranged? I kind of want to know. It's the human interest story here about our new drug czar.
Yeah.
Your son's in jail.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it. Yeah, we'll keep an eye on it, and maybe you'll find something new we can report on in the next report. Now, we always do this here in the Entertainment Report, too, and that is our rundown of the celebrity bus, because there's always there seems to be somebody who's getting busted for pot, and you've got a couple of them on the page.
Right. We've had a couple in the last week or so. There's continuing arrests in the sports world. In the case of Darius Miles, a basketball player for the Memphis Grizzlies, he was arrested on Wednesday in Illinois. A traffic stop, a search found less than 2.5 grams of marijuana. He was charged with a misdemeanor. He was released on a $100 bond. It, you know, sort of a little bit inconsequential as far as the amount and all that, but they did, you know, pull them over, you know, for a traffic stop. It's like the same story over and over and over again. You know, athletes especially getting pulled over in their vehicles. In this case, there wasn't any discussion or mention of smoke. He had a suspended license. So with that, they probably proceeded to search, you know, at that point without even smelling marijuana, let's say for sake of argument, which we just don't really know. So he's the first NBA player to be arrested for marijuana since Joakim Noah was arrested almost a year ago last May in Gainesville, also after the season. Miles has had problems in the past. He had a 10-game suspension earlier this season, going back to last year's failure of drug test, which led to him being in violation of the NBA drug policy. So he's had problems in that regard. He's moved around the league quite a bit over 6 years. He was a high school player who jumped to the NBA. That might explain a little bit of perhaps his problems, you know, dealing with everything, kind of a rush job, kind of like Kobe Bryant, but, you know, and he just, you know, he's moved around. He was drafted by the, LA Clippers. He had his best years, with Portland. You must remember Darius.
Oh, yeah. Back in the jailblazer era.
Very good years in Portland, averaged 14 points a game a couple of years ago. Maybe you could tell me, are you familiar what's happened with him and why?
Well, you know, Darius was part of what we call the jailblazers era up here in Portland, and, had a incident with the coach, called him a racial epithet. He was generally just a bad guy. We were glad to see rid of, but I don't recall any stories of his getting in trouble with marijuana here in Oregon.
Well, I guess he's had, you know, at least, you know, I'm not exactly sure of regulations. Sometimes it's take, you know, you fail one or more drug tests and you're in violation of the policy, league policy. So that would be my guess, you know, that he must have failed, you know, at least one or more.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why he was suspended, you know.
Yeah, yeah. He wasn't able to start for the Grizzlies.
It was not a big surprise. There used to be a lot more arrests for NBA players than there has been lately. And now most of the sports arrests are NFL players.
Yeah. You know? And also in the music world, Reverend Run's son from Run DMC.
There you go. Someone in the hip hop world. Yes, JoJo Simmons is the son of Reverend Run, Joseph Simmons from Run DMC. And his uncle is hip hop mogul Russell Simmons, was arrested for marijuana. Apparently he was buying marijuana in, Washington Heights section of Manhattan, which is sort of upper Manhattan, like north of Harlem. And he was found in his car, his BMW, apparently rolling a joint or a blunt. And the way the story was told, and it's kind of tabloidy, so I'm not really sure what's exactly true, but this is what was reported by the Daily News and New York Post in New York, was that first he tried to kind of like get away by just like getting out of his parking spot, and he kind of hit the car ahead of him or behind him, almost like you'd seen a movie. And then he got out of the car and started to run. So run, JoJo, run. If it's really true, you know, he took off and, they caught up to him and arrested him. But, I don't know much more about any particular charges, and I'm sure it was a small amount of marijuana, but it's, you know, you don't want to laugh about anybody getting arrested, but it seemed, this one sort of had a little bit of humor tinge to it.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep our eyes on that and all the celebrity stoner stories at celebstoner.com. And, just wanted to find out if you've got any, appearances coming up in May or June that people should know about.
Well, yes, Ollie. I will be going out to California, and I'm going to be there for a couple of weeks. While I'm there in the beginning of June, I will be at the MPP's benefit at the Playboy Mansion. I'll be reporting live for Celeb Stoner from there.
Well, somebody's got to do it.
And then I will be at the THC Expo.
Yeah.
That's happening on the 13th and 14th of June at the LA Convention Center. So, I will be attending that and working out plans to perhaps do a book signing. We'll see. And, myself and my co-author Shirley Halperin. So I'm going to be in California for part of June.
All right. Check out that THC Expo. And if you can make it to the MPP Playboy party, I don't know if they're still selling tickets or not, but, if they are, make it out there and, meet Steve Bloom, among all the other people you'd probably meet there. I know you'll have a good time. I wish I could be,
I've never been to, the MPP event there. I've been to several in New York and, of course the THC Expo is new. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, if you need anyone to back you up at that Playboy Mansion, you know my number.
Sure, you're, you know.
I can just make the drive down I-5, baby.
See you there.
All right, thanks a lot. Steve Bloom from celebstoner.com, everybody.
Take care, Russ.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit PotCultureBook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. Here's the winner of 2009's Global Marijuana Music Awards Best Rap Song, Superfly, by Neo Cartoon Lover from Sweden. Neo Cartoon Lover are duo Marcus Elkholm and Henrik Berg. They blend the best of dance, hip-hop, and electro to make their unique mixed style. This is the duo's second year as global MMA winners, having won Best Ska in 2008 GMMA with their song Party Hardy. They were recently acclaimed MySpace Hit of the Week for today's award-winning song, Superfly. Neo are taking 2009 by storm with a new album in the making, new collaborations with Swedish and international artists, and a summer tour planned for Europe. Keep updated about Neo Cartoon Lover at myspace.com/neocartoonlover. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Neo Cartoon Lover with Supafly. Neo Pro will be in a moment. He don't exist cause he's an opponent. Be gone like so fly, 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 so fly. Hit the scene like I came out of nothing, came out of dirt, I came out of something. Just like that, hate is a front, and I stated the truth, I ain't playing or bluffing. I don't lose, I play my part, introduce my latest art. You can choose to play this smart, don't be a hater, no. Move to the left, move to the right. Be someone fly, reach for the sky. I'm super fly when I'm rapping, I'm super fly anywhere. She's in the dressing room naked, I'm in the lobby like, yeah. Got my rag on my neck and I got my blacks done the shades. Baby wanted to sex me soon as I hopped on the stage. I said I hopped on the stage, I said I rocked on the stage. And since your body is sexy, then move your body and dance. Girl, move your body and dance. Just move your body and dance. Now put your hands in the air and put your body in trance. Let me tell a little evening story. I was chillin' at a recent party. To be honest, it was boring. But then I met a dreamy shawty. She was really sweet and charming. At first a peach, a darling. But then she started getting freaky on me. Completely freaky. You could tell she was really naughty. By the way, she was leaning on me. Those breasts were breathing on me. My dick was speaking for me. Said she liked the way I smell Armani. Call me babe, you need to call me. I said, why? It's 3 in the morning. Still time. Leave. I'm super fly when I'm rapping. I'm super fly anywhere. She's in the dressing room naked. I'm in the lobby like, yeah. Got my rag on my neck and I got my blacks on the shades. Baby wanted to sex me soon as I hopped on the stage. I said I hopped on the stage. I said I rocked on the stage. And since your body is sexy, then move your body and dance. Girl, move your body and dance. Just move your body and dance. Now put your hands in the air and put your body in trance.
This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America. And it's all because of your support. Take some time to join NORML at www.normal.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join NORML today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis, that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our normal daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations.
The LFL, I'll let you know more about that when we get more details.
836 WHP 580, RJ Harris in the morning, the WHP morning crew, and we're welcoming to the program right now Chris Goldstein, who is from... give me the name of the organization, Pennsylvanians for Medical Marijuana, is that right?
That is correct, RJ. Pennsylvanians for Medical Marijuana, in support of the new legislation, HB 1393, introduced just a week ago.
Okay, and what does that provision call for?
Well, there are 13 states that offer a state-authorized medical marijuana program. New Jersey and New York are considering it, and now Pennsylvania is considering it as well. HB 1393 would allow patients who have debilitating medical conditions, cancer, HIV, MS, to apply to the Pennsylvania Department of Health for a registry card so that they could legally access marijuana for therapeutic use.
And then who sells it?
Well, it's not really often for sale. The patients would be able to cultivate some marijuana in their home if they could follow state law in that regard. There would be compassion centers set up. It might be sold in the compassion centers as the provisions move forward, but it might also be given away for no remuneration as well.
Well, but in California, there are pages of ads in the newspaper for medical marijuana.
That's true. There's a mature market in California. They passed Proposition 215 in 1996, and a provision called SB 420 passed in 1997 that allowed the sale of marijuana. Actually, it contributes a significant amount of tax dollars to the state, well over $150 million per year. These dispensaries do pay labor tax, sales tax. It's 9% in California. But in Pennsylvania, it might be subject to sales tax as well in the compassion centers, and patients would have to pay about $50 per year to register with the state.
Well, Governor go ahead.
Oh, yeah, Governor Schwarzenegger.
Let me ask the question. Governor Schwarzenegger is talking about legalizing marijuana and taxing it. Why not that?
Well, it certainly makes sense to look at ending the failed policy of marijuana prohibition. I mean, it's been in place for almost 72 years, and it really hasn't done any good for the country. I think Arnold Schwarzenegger has presided over the largest cannabis economy in the world, and as a Republican, he's probably seeing, the tax benefits that could arise from it. Of course, that's a long discussion, and it's far away. I mean, when we talk about medical marijuana, AIDS patients, cancer patients, people who are really suffering and dying, can't really wait for a longer discussion about ending marijuana prohibition and taxing it and all these wonderful things that might happen in the future. Medical marijuana is something that people in California with cancer access right now to help their conditions before they die.
So personally, why do you want medical marijuana? Personally.
I've seen it work for people.
Well, personally, what about, no. What about you? What's wrong with you that you need it?
There's nothing wrong. Thank the Lord, RJ, that there's nothing wrong with me. But
okay.
Cancer patients. All right. I'm an advocate.
All right. Okay. Okay. I want to bring you full circle because one of your, one of the people who works with you or is, an advocate as well kind of put words in my mouth in a way in that he said, and this got back to you, that I said this whole medical marijuana thing was a joke. Now, what I meant by that was not that it's a joke that people would use it for pain or any of that. But I see it as just a foot in the door to legalizing marijuana. And you basically confirmed that by saying all these wonderful things and failed policies and all this. Isn't it true, Chris, that what you really want is either the decriminalization or the legalization of marijuana and medical marijuana, while you're making a case for how good it is for people suffering, is no more than a foot in the door?
So I think, RJ, what you're saying is we should let HIV and cancer...
No. Hold on. No, wait. Stand by for a second. I didn't say that. I said what you really want. This has nothing to do with that. What you really want is for marijuana to be legalized.
I really want HIV and cancer patients to have access to something that many people access in an underground market already.
Now, okay, and we hear you loud and clear on that. There's no,
okay,
but you really want marijuana legalized.
I really want marijuana in the hands of people like who have HIV, cancer, and MS so that they can have access to it. I've been to many states. I've interviewed hundreds of people who've accessed medical marijuana for their benefit. I've interviewed doctors, scientists, politicians. And you know what, RJ? This is a conservative issue. Medical marijuana comes down to three things. States' rights, personal privacy, which includes freedom of medical treatment. And it also comes down to this concept that we don't want people suffering. We don't want more HIV patients in the correction system.
Okay, well, listen.
It costs us money to treat people with cancer if we put them in jail for growing a couple marijuana plants.
With that, I am out of time. But go ahead and give that website so people can come see you.
Thanks so much, RJ. It's PA, the numeral 4, MMJ, so PA4MMJ.org.
Okay, very good. Chris, thanks for spending time with us this morning. You take care.
RJ, thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. 841 WHB 580.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a note about television programming on the internet. Normally on Fridays, you could catch me on the Cannabis Common Sense TV program, which is a cable access show out here in Portland, Oregon, broadcast on Ustream.tv. That's the letter U, STREAM.tv. And the show is Cannabis Common Sense. However, the show is on hiatus today. They're doing some work in the studio. We'll be back the next week on Friday the 22nd. And from last week, I want to say thanks to our caller who called in from Texas, even though I wasn't on the show. The panel was full by the time I got there, so there was no room for old Radical Russ. Everybody got quite a laugh out of our Texas caller calling Paul Stanford Russ all the time. We do look kind of similar. We're big, fat, white guys with brown hair who talk about pot on TV in Portland, Oregon. So I can understand the confusion. Thanks for downloading the podcast. We'll be back next week with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.